The biggest risk to your organization, it's not what you think. It's not some future, you know, hyper-intelligent AGI taking over the world and making you redundant.
Not the sci-fi scenario.
No, not at all. The threat is far more immediate. It's more mundane, really, and far more likely to get you fined. I mean, just astronomical amounts of money.
Right.
The biggest risk is the AI you're already using right now. The AI you honestly don't even know about. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're moving past that whole, you know, early 2020s experimentation phase and jumping headfirst into the new reality of institutional AI governance.
It's a whole new ballgame.
It is. Oh. We are tackling the silent growing menace that's being called shadow AI. And we're going to talk about why eliminating it is really the only path to survival in a world of fractured compliance.
It's absolutely critical.
So our mission today for you is pretty straightforward. We're delivering the essential blueprint. How do you build a legally defensible AI compliance framework in a globally regulated world?
A world that is changing by the minute.
Exactly. So we're focusing on the foundational, the non-negotiable tool that makes this possible. The global AI inventory and its backbone, the AI bill of materials, what they're calling the AI boomip. Because right now, the rules are changing faster than your developers can integrate a new API. And that gap, that's where the liability lives.
Okay, let's unpack this.
And we really have to approach this with absolute urgency. The operational context has just fundamentally shifted in the last year or two.
In what way?
We're now operating in an environment where data sovereignty is highly fragmented. And regulatory expansion is, well, it's rapid and it's global. You just can't manage compliance regionally anymore.
Okay, so that idea of having a U.S. policy and an EU policy, that's dead.
It's completely obsolete. The sources are confirming the sheer scale of the problem. AI regulations now span over 120 jurisdictions globally.
120. And this isn't just, you know, the big players, the EU, the US, China. This includes granular rules that are emerging from individual states, provinces, independent nations, each one with a slightly different interpretation of what high risk means.
120 jurisdictions. That's not a compliance landscape. That's a global regulatory mosaic designed by M.C. Escher.
It is. And that scale, it just mandates a fundamental shift in how organizations think about AI. They have to stop the reactive cycle.
The whack-a-mole approach.
Exactly. The playing whack-a-mole, where you only troubleshoot a system after a breach, or worse, after an audit. We have to move to proactive institutional governance.
So it's about anticipation, not reaction.
It has to be. If you cannot produce the necessary documentation for every single piece of AI running inside your enterprise, you are fundamentally incapable of meeting the requirements of those 120 disparate rule sets. It's a visibility issue at its core.
And that 120 jurisdiction number is terrifying enough on its own, but it's what makes the reality of shadow AI an existential threat. Let's just look at the gap between what companies think is happening and what's actually happening. Most organizations, when their CIO or their CSO ask for an inventory, they genuinely believe they only have, what, three or maybe four official, centrally approved AI projects running.
Right. The ones that went through procurement.
The ones on the books. That's the official tally they trust. But here's where it gets really interesting and why the sources were so keen to flag this.
Okay.
Recent global audits where organizations have done these deep scans, you know, looking under the hood, not just at the official roster, they show that up to 40% of departments are using unauthorized, undocumented AI tools.
40%. That is a staggering number.
40%. That's nearly half your organization running systems that legal, procurement, and the security teams have zero visibility into.
It's the definition of a massive operational and legal risk hiding in plain sight. And crucially, this isn't limited to just, you know, one or two specialized departments. This risk, it spans every single function.
What are some examples? Where are we seeing this pop up?
Oh, it's across the board. Developers are using third-party APIs for code generation to speed things up. But those APIs are often hosted on foreign servers, and they're ingesting proprietary, unreviewed internal code.
Oh, wow.
Marketing teams are using generative AI to create content, synthesize customer responses, and maybe most dangerously, we're seeing it in really sensitive areas like HR screening and resume analysis.
The hiring manager just signs up for a tool.
Exactly. A manager might sign up for a quick, cheap sauce tool to filter candidates, and they have no idea they are introducing potentially illegal algorithmic bias into their hiring process.
And the thing is, the people doing this, they're not acting maliciously. They are acting for efficiency.
Of course not.
They download a tool or use an API because it solves an immediate, tangible problem for them. But in doing that, they completely bypass the standard procurement review, the security penetration test, and all the critical legal checks that would document what data is being used and where it's going.
And that bypassing, that's exactly why the risk is so lethal in this climate of fragmented data sovereignty. Let's trace the legal problem.
Okay.
Imagine an undocumented AI tool used by a team in, say, Milan. They're summarizing customer feedback from their European operations.
Right.
If that tool, because it's a shadow AI deployment, accidentally routes that feedback, which contains GDPR-protected personal data, to a third-party server hosted in a non-compliant jurisdiction, say, somewhere outside the EU, that single action could instantly trigger a massive compliance failure.
It's not just the transfer of data, is it? It's also about what the model was trained on in the first place.
Mm.
If that was done without proper consent, the deployer is still on the hook.
Exactly. The problem isn't just the accidental transfer. The core issue is the complete lack of documentation about its training data and its deployment context. If a regulator from one of those 120-plus jurisdictions comes knocking and asks, "Show me the chain of custody for the data used to train the system," and you can't answer,
you're done.
You have zero defensibility. You are immediately in a position of non-compliance simply because of ignorance.
So the crux statement really is, governance cannot exist without visibility. The era of shadow AI has to end.
It must.
But I have to ask the practical question that the source has sort of hinted at. If 40% is the norm, how do you manage the internal political fallout? You can't just flip a switch and shut down half the efficiency tools your departments rely on without crippling the organization.
That is the real-world operational challenge. And it moves beyond just identifying the risk. The goal can't be punitive.
So you're not firing people?
No. The goal is remediation and documentation. When a shadow AI system is discovered, the first step is to assess its value. If it's a critical tool, let's say an AI-powered logistics optimizer, you don't shut it down. You immediately force it into the governance framework.
Bring it into the light.
You initiate an emergency AI bomb creation. You force bias and risk testing. You mandate a legal review. You bring it into compliance.
Because the alternative is what?
The alternative is paralysis. If you try to shut down every unsanctioned tool instantly, you just slow down the business, you confirm everyone's worst feels about bureaucracy, and you simply encourage employees to become more clandestine in how they use tools.
So they just get better at hiding it.
Exactly. The complexity of these 120-plus jurisdictions, it demands that we accept AI is now infrastructure. We have to inventory it, not ban it. That complexity is why the lack of visibility is so incredibly dangerous. Organizations have to stop seeing AI as a series of isolated experiments and start seeing it as critical, regulated infrastructure.
Just like a server or a database.
Which brings us directly to the immediate, non-negotiable goal that all the sources emphasize. The very first step in introducing an institutional AI compliance framework must be creating a comprehensive global AI inventory.
The single source of truth.
And crucially, this inventory has to actively use technology to identify and then document all those hidden systems, the shadow AI, that are currently operating outside the lines, and then force them into a structured disclosure format. And that format, that's the AI bill of materials.
Okay, so we know the mission.
Yeah.
Build the inventory, kill the shadow AI. But how do you actually build an inventory that can satisfy the audit requirements of a dozen different global legal frameworks at the same time?
It's a huge challenge.
When we talk about supply chain security for normal software, we talk about the ESPBOM, right? The software bill of materials.
Mm.
That tells you all the components, the open source libraries, the dependencies.
Yeah.
It's a static map of the code.
And that's our starting analogy, but it immediately falls short. AI isn't just code. It's a living system whose behavior changes based on the data it ingests and the environment it's in.
Right. It learns. It drifts.
Exactly. And so the rapidly evolving AI ecosystem requires something far more detailed, dynamic, and legally focused. That's the AI BOEMM, the AI bill of materials.
A dynamic, legally focused SBOM for AI.
That's it. The definition of the AI BOEMM is that it must be a machine-readable, constantly updated record of every single component in the AI stack. It can't be a one-time PDF memo you stick in a folder.
It has to be a live system.
It has to be. Because an AI stack is dictated by its training data, not just its code, building an inventory that is truly defensible from a regulatory standpoint, one that can withstand the scrutiny of those 120 regulatory bodies. It demands that you track four critical, non-negotiable pillars of information.
Okay, let's break those down. Let's start with the first link in the accountability chain, the origin story of the model itself.
Yeah.
This is what we're calling model provenance.
Correct.
The AI bone needs to document exactly where the model came from, because that origin dictates the initial legal liability. The sources lay out three main pathways. First, the clean slate approach. Is it an in-house developed model built from scratch by your team?
Right, path one. Path two is probably the most common route for customized enterprise AI. Is it a fine-tuned open source model, meaning you took a massive pre-trained model, like a big LLM, and you modified it with your own data to tailor its performance?
And then third, the one that's the source of most shadow AI, is it a third-party SaaS API, something you call on-demand, where the model itself lives totally outside your firewall?
That distinction is absolutely critical for compliance teams. The moment you fine-tune an open-source model, you inherit a huge portion of the risk and responsibility for its future behavior.
How so?
You inherit the risk of bias that was already in the original foundation model, plus any new bias you introduced with your own fine-tuning data. You become both a deployer and, to a limited extent, a provider.
But hang on, if I'm just calling a third-party SaaS API for, say, translation services, isn't my liability pretty minimal? Why do I need to track the provider's provenance there?
You absolutely need to. While the provider of the API is liable for the core model's performance, you are still the one deploying it and integrating its outputs into your business.
Okay, I see.
Your AI bomb must document the contractual agreements you have with that third party, making sure they meet their own compliance requirements. If their model is found to be non-compliant in a region where you use it, your business is instantly exposed, regardless of whose fault it originally was.
So you're liable by association?
Essentially. The AI bomb has to make this distinction crystal clear. It has to detail who controls the core algorithms and weights, and just as importantly, it has to document the model version number.
Ah, because they're updated constantly.
Weekly, sometimes monthly. Compliance teams need to know exactly which version was running when a high-risk decision was made or when a failure occurred. Provenance is about creating a historical ledger of change.
Okay, so that's the model. But this next one, pillar two, this feels like where AI compliance just hits a sheer wall of global data privacy laws.
It's arguably the most sensitive area.
This is data lineage. It tracks the source of the training data, and this seems way more complex than tracking code because data is dynamic and it carries embedded legal rights.
It does. The specifics that must be documented are incredibly granular. Where exactly did the training data come from? Was it licensed? Was it scraped from the public web?
And here's the big one, the $65,000 question.
Does it include personal data? If so, what kind of personal data? We have to differentiate between, you know, benign PII and highly sensitive data like health records or financial history.
And it's not just the data source, right? It's the consent.
Exactly. We have to track the legal consent around its use. For example, if you trained a model on your own internal customer records, your AI bomb must link back to the specific terms of service or privacy policy that allowed that data to be used for AI training.
So if the consent was only for customer service, but you used it to train a new logistics model,
you are in immediate breach of privacy laws in potentially dozens of regions.
So let's connect this back to that global landscape. If personal data from any of those 120-plus jurisdictions was used, compliance requirements instantly trigger. What are the key regulatory demands that data lineage is supposed to satisfy?
Primarily, two things: transparency and auditability. Many modern frameworks now guarantee citizens a right to explanation for decisions made about them.
Okay.
If your system denies someone a loan, and that person demands to know why, you have to be able to trace that output back to the model and then trace the model back to the specific characteristics of the training data that influenced the decision.
And without a robust data lineage in the AI bomb,
you can't provide that explanation. If your system falls under the scope of, say, the privacy laws of an Asian nation because of the regional customer data it ingested, but your AI bomb doesn't document that lineage, you have an immediate, provable, and very serious compliance failure.
So data lineage isn't just an IT documentation exercise.
No, it's the legal shield that proves you respected the origin and the use limitations of the source material.
What about public data? If I use a public data set, doesn't that simplify things?
It simplifies the permission side of things, but not the bias side, and critically, not the quality side. The AI bomb must still document that public data set, because if that data set is later found to be compromised, containing malicious code, inaccurate information, or illegally acquired personal data, you, the deployer, are responsible for the fact that your model ingested it. The AI bomb provides the record to isolate which versions of your model were trained on that bad data, allowing for rapid remediation.
Okay, so we know where the model came from, provenance.
Yeah.
And we know what data it ate lineage. Now we get to pillar three. What is it actually doing, and what's the real-world impact of its actions? This is a deployment context.
And this pillar is what transitions the AI bomb from just a technical document into a true risk assessment tool. The documentation needs to capture the actual use case, the function it serves, and critically, the impact of the AI's output on individuals.
We need details.
Granular detail. Who is using the tool? Is it interacting with customers? Is it automating a full decision? Or just providing a recommendation for a human to review?
Because there's a huge difference.
A massive difference. A back office tool that summarizes internal memos has a vastly different risk profile than a tool that summarizes medical records or determines insurance premiums.
And this is the line that regulators globally are drawing, right? The difference between a simple recommendation and a definitive high-risk decision.
Absolutely. This is where the emerging global regulations, especially the EU AI Act, which is really the blueprint, this is where they draw a very sharp line. The AI bomb must specifically identify if the AI is used for high-risk decisions.
So what's the threshold?
If the AI is just recommending a marketing color scheme, the risk profile is minimal. But the moment it impacts fundamental rights, safety, or economic opportunity, the regulatory obligations become immense.
And we're talking about those critical use cases again.
The same ones. Systems involved in hiring, potentially screening out qualified candidates based on biased data, or systems involved in credit scoring, determining who gets a loan and at what rate.
So when a system is classified as high risk in this pillar, what does that classification trigger? What happens next?
It triggers mandatory, intensive, continuous oversight, all of which has to be documented within the AI bomb. This includes mandatory human review protocols, a human-in-the-loop requirement, rigorous bias and adversarial testing before deployment, and dedicated audit logs that record every input, every output, and every human intervention.
It sounds incredibly resource intensive.
It is. This pillar forces organizations to stop focusing on the technology itself and start focusing entirely on the societal or personal outcome of the system. The AI bomb provides the signpost to activate those high-risk controls, ensuring resources aren't wasted, tracking minimal risk tools while neglecting the systems that pose real legal danger.
Okay, so the first three pillars are technical, data-driven, but this fourth pillar feels purely legal. This is where it gets really complex for any organization that uses third-party AI systems, which is basically every organization today.
This is the role factor, and it is not trivial. It determines legal liability.
How so?
Global legal frameworks are realizing they can't assign blanket responsibility. They're moving away from a single definition of user or creator and are introducing distinct legal roles to assign specific responsibilities based on operational control. We see this most clearly in frameworks like the EU AI Act.
And that framework defines two critical roles.
Two critical roles based on involvement and control. The first is the provider. This is the entity that created the AI system, the developer, the SaaS company, the internal team that built the model. The provider is generally liable for the quality, safety, and the initial training integrity of the core model.
Okay, that makes sense. And the second role is the entity that's actually putting that tool into practice.
Correct. That's the deployer. The deployer is the entity that is actually using the AI system in their operations, integrating it, and controlling the input data it receives. The deployer is liable for ensuring the system is used appropriately, that their input data is clean and compliant, and that they adhere to any human oversight rules dictated by the deployment context we just talked about.
But hold on. This is the tension I see in the source material. If I'm paying a massive SaaS company to be the provider of a sophisticated AI model, like a resume screener, why should I, the deployer, be responsible for bias testing? Isn't that on them?
That is the core legal pivot of 2026. The sources show that regulators are insisting that deployers cannot simply outsource responsibility. While the provider is liable for the initial model quality, the deployer is liable for the outcome in their specific operational environment.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. Let's say the provider guarantees a system works neutrally on generalized global data. But you, the deployer, feed it hiring data specific to your region, which might contain historical biases related to ZIP codes or names. If that system then produces discriminatory hiring decisions based on your input data,
the liability is on me.
The liability falls squarely on you, the deployer, for failing to test the system in your specific local context.
So the AI boo needs to track this distinction because the compliance requirements are fundamentally different for each role.
Exactly. Your legal liability changes significantly. The AI bomb has to document your contractual relationship, specifying the boundaries of liability, what the provider guarantees, and what the deployer assumes. This lets compliance teams track not just the technical lineage, but the legal lineage, who is responsible for what outcome.
Which is essential for defense.
It's essential for defense against multi-jurisdictional lawsuits, especially when you're operating across 5 different countries, each with its own labor laws. This pillar transforms the AI bomb into a legal risk map.
Okay, so once we have that massive granular inventory, the global AI inventory populated by thousands of these detailed AI bombs, we finally have visibility. But visibility alone doesn't equal governance.
Not at all.
The next crucial step is categorizing the inherent risk of each tool, because you can't apply high-risk protocols to everything. You don't have the resources.
Precisely. And in this globally regulated environment, the key guidance from the sources is to avoid creating your own bespoke internal standards.
Why not?
Because they'll just immediately conflict with international expectations. You're just creating more legal work for yourself down the line. The recommendation is to use an internationally recognized 4-tier approach, one specifically aligned with ISO IEC 42001.
And that's emerging as the global benchmark.
It is. It's quickly becoming the global benchmark for AI management systems. Aligning with it just ensures interoperability with compliance efforts worldwide.
So let's break down these 4 tiers, because this classification dictates the entire operational roadmap, how much money you spend on oversight, and how much legal attention a tool gets.
It's the playbook for prioritization.
Okay, starting at the absolute highest level of risk, the red zone that demands immediate shutdown, prohibited risk.
These are systems that are deemed socially unacceptable or outright illegal under specific jurisdictions. They violate fundamental rights as defined in those regions. They are non-compliant by design.
So we're talking about things like social scoring systems.
Exactly. Social scoring is a concept banned in many Western democracies. Certain types of unfettered biometric surveillance systems would be another example. The AI bomb's role here is simple. If a tool is classified as prohibited risk in a specific territory, the instruction is immediate and absolute.
Shut it down.
Cease deployment in that territory. There is no compliance pathway for prohibited risk. There is only cessation and removal.
I imagine the complexity here is that something might be permitted in one country, but absolutely prohibited in the next.
That's the key challenge. The AI bomb has to dynamically manage that status based on deployment context. For example, some jurisdictions prohibit using AI for certain manipulative subconscious techniques in marketing, while others treat it as acceptable commercial speech.
I see.
So if your marketing team's shadow AI tool is discovered and it uses such a technique, the AI bomb must instantly flag it as prohibited in the first jurisdiction and say limited risk in the second. The classification is tied to the geographical application.
Okay, so next, the area that requires the most stringent controls and budget, high risk.
These are systems that don't breach fundamental laws outright, but whose failure or bias could have a profound and severe impact on fundamental rights, safety, or legal status. They may not be illegal, but their potential for harm is severe enough to warrant constant, robust oversight.
And this is where we get back to those litmus test examples.
We have to reiterate them. AI used in hiring, access to education, credit scoring, or access to essential public services like healthcare scheduling.
So when an AI bomb classifies a system as high risk, what specifically does the compliance team have to demand?
Beyond the documentation itself, the high-risk status mandates a whole suite of proactive controls. This includes mandatory continuous monitoring for model drift, rigorous bias testing against known protected characteristics specific to that region.
Like race, gender, veteran status.
Exactly. And required notification to end users that an AI is involved in the decision process. And the sources also emphasize the necessity of adversarial testing.
You mean actively trying to break the system?
Actively trying to break it or expose its vulnerabilities. And those test results have to be stored in the AI bomb as proof of due diligence. The regulatory burden here is immense, and the AI bomb is the only scalable way to prove you've met that burden across 100 internal different rule books.
Okay, moving down the scale, we hit the tier focused heavily on consumer protection and transparency. Limited risk.
Right. This tier doesn't pose a direct threat to rights or safety, but it absolutely requires disclosure. Transparency is the core compliance driver here. Limited risk systems require clear, explicit labeling.
So the user has to know they're talking to a machine.
They must be explicitly aware they are interacting with an AI, not a human, or that the content they're viewing was generated by a machine. The common examples are customer-facing chatbots or synthetic content generators.
Deepfake tools.
Deepfake media, text, images, audio for commercial purposes. The risk isn't that they cause legal harm, but that they deceive or mislead the end user, and that violates consumer protection laws.
And how does this impact the shadow AI problem?
Significantly. If a marketing team is using a shadow AI to generate thousands of customer emails, and that tool is classified as limited risk, the compliance team must ensure that every single communication includes the mandated disclaimer, like, this message was drafted using an AI assistant.
And if it's undocumented, that's just not happening.
It's inevitably missed, leading to non-compliance across the board. The AI bomb forces that disclosure to happen at the point of deployment.
And finally, the lowest tier, the easiest to manage. Minimal risk. The goal here is just to document it and move on.
These are the back-end tools with the lowest risk profile. They operate purely internally, and their outputs don't directly impact individuals externally. Their impact is purely organizational optimization.
But there's a strict rule here, isn't there?
A vital one that must be adhered to. These are tools focused purely on optimization with no personal data interaction. If they handle aggregated, anonymized logistics data or optimized server loads, the documentation requirements are significantly lighter.
Okay, that tiered system provides the operational roadmap. But let's circle back to the central challenge. Finding that 40% of shadow AI lurking on the network, that can't be a manual process of sending out surveys.
Absolutely not. It would be a nightmare and you'd never find it all. The sources strongly recommend a proactive technological solution for continuous network monitoring. This is where governance meets reality.
So let's share the pro tip from the source material. How do compliance teams actually hunt these things down?
The suggested method is to use an automated discovery tool that continuously scans the network perimeter and internal traffic for what they call AI signatures.
An AI signature, what does that actually mean?
It's a combination of telltale technical artifacts. First, you look for specific API keys being used for known third-party LLM providers' calls to OpenAI, Anthropic, Cloud AI services. Second, you look for unusual spikes in large volume data uploads from internal servers to public cloud environments. That often signifies proprietary data being used for fine-tuning a shadow AI model. Third, you look for the presence of specific machine learning libraries like TensorFlow or PyTorch installed on unauthorized employee laptops or unmanaged VMs.
And these signatures get flagged?
Instantly flagged by the automated tools. And then they're immediately cross-referenced against the official registry established by the AI bomb.
So if the scanning tool detects an API call signature for a large language model, but that specific API key and use case are missing from the AI bomb, boom, it's flagged as a shadow AI risk.
Precisely. This proactive discovery process allows the organization to remediate the risk immediately. They can either force documentation, creating the full AI bomb and assigning its proper risk tier, or they can shut it down entirely if it's found to be prohibited or high risk and non-compliant. This active automated hunting is the only scalable way to manage the regulatory chaos. You have to find it before the regulator does. So, to sort of summarize the core message of this deep dive, moving from AI experimentation to institutional governance is no longer a matter of competitive advantage. It is a matter of legal survival in 2026.
It's table stakes.
It is. The complexity of that global regulatory mosaic, the 120 plus jurisdictions, and the rampant issue of shadow AI, they necessitate immediate foundational action. And the creation of the AI Bill of Materials, it provides that necessary technical and legal lineage.
Provenance, data, context, role.
All of it. It's what you need to meet the strict transparency and auditability requirements of modern global AI laws. By taking this foundational step, creating the global AI inventory, and meticulously documenting every system, you transition your organization from a position of dangerous ignorance to one of defensible compliance.
And that defensible compliance is the only viable path forward.
Yeah.
We started this conversation talking about the problem of discovery, of just finding the shadow AI. But the source material gives us a glimpse into the challenge that comes next once the AI bomb is fully implemented. The next phase, and the one that will consume compliance teams for years, is moving from discovery to design.
Okay.
The challenge is specifically named, mapping 120-plus jurisdictions to one global standard. The AI bomb gives you the granular data you need about your systems, but the regulatory framework remains this massive, multinational legal headache.
It's the next mountain to climb.
It is. You have to synthesize wildly different cultural and legal risk appetites into one unified policy that works for your enterprise globally. So here's the thought I want to leave you with. How complex must that single global standard truly be to harmoniously integrate the requirements of nearly 120 separate nations, especially when some of those requirements are actively contradictory? That is the profound challenge that builds directly on the foundation of the AI bomb, something to mull over as you begin the process of inventorying your own AI ecosystem.